Hey, this is the COVID Kid. Before we begin the show, want to point your attention to preborn.org/wretched. I have been informed they have a matching grant to the end of the year, which means whatever amount of money you can give to this amazing pro-life ministry, it will literally be doubled. Preborn.org/wretched. They give away free ultrasounds and they always preach the gospel to mommies and daddies. It is a most excellent ministry. I would commend to your attention. Preborn.org/wretched. Let's start the show.
Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
In issues of racism, there are going to be some who will say, why don't you stick to preaching gospel?
The social, political, and economic concerns have increasingly encroached upon the minds of those who should know better.
The real transformative work in a nation is the transformative work of the gospel.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
What's it like to have the COVID? Well, let me tell you, this is Wretched Radio. Don't know if you are one of the ever-increasing apparent statistics of the number of people who are experiencing the Rona, but I'm one of them. For the last 2 weeks, I've had the pleasure of experiencing it's all the rage. Everybody's talking about the corona. Well, I've got actual experience. Thank you for giving me some days off to basically nap. That was kind of my corona experience. You just want to nap a lot. Think of it like this. Now, I did research on this, so don't think that this is actually describing something that I do every single night. But imagine a person, maybe you have, for whatever reason, decided to take an over-the-counter sleeping medicine. Typically, it's just a wallop of Benadryl. Makes you kind of nappy. And then you eat yourself one of them, their dissolvable melatonin pills.
Yes.
You know that feeling, should you happen to have ever done that, I just did research on this. You wake up at about 2 o'clock in the morning. Perhaps you need to visit a different room next to your bedroom. And you get up and you're kind of like, whoa, I'm a little tingly here. Not exactly sure my feet are feeling the ground. And wow, I cannot wait to fall back in that bed and just snooze for a few more hours. That's what corona is like. At least it was for me. It was just a buzzed. I'm nappy. I feel like I'm walking in concrete. And I'm almost, it was one of those maladies that you perhaps have heard about and have had no sympathy for. I have to confess, like I used to feel the chronic fatigue syndrome. Have you ever met those people who claim that they've got things like that where they're just always exhausted? And maybe you've thought, well, snap out of it, get over it, move on, just pick up your feet and get to work. Well, what I've discovered is stuff can get into your body that causes it to just drag. And that's what corona did for me. Thankfully, did not end up in a hospital ward. Didn't have to deal with the breathing issues. I suspect that would be far less fun than just being poopticated all the time. But nevertheless, took about 10, 12 days to stop feeling like I'd just taken a Benadryl and a melatonin. I mean, if I'd ever done that.
Right. Yeah, I know you haven't.
No.
What was the test like? Did you get your brain tickled?
Is that really necessary? I'll tell you, it is one thing that I did learn that was fascinating. I took a number of tests because I was anxious to be done with it, get back to work, despite my feeling. And so I think I had 4 tests. 3 of them were negative. And guess how many, therefore, new cases were added to the corona list? 3 new cases. 1 guy, 3 new cases. See what that math looks like there? And each one of the tests was slightly different. One of them drove up the woman. I did not realize that this was so helpful. I didn't know that the back of my head on the inside was itching. Because when she shoved that swab up my nose, she was able to scratch the back of my brain. And it was really quite an enjoyable experience if you like that kind of thing. Other times, okay, put it in your nose, run it around in a circle 3 times, hold it for 5 seconds. Another time, it was just run it around 7 times. It wasn't exactly consistent. Nevertheless, I was 3 new cases of corona, finally testing negative. Did I say positive? Negative. I was positive 3 times, and that was be considered 3 positives versus the 1 negative. You do with that as you see fit. Nevertheless, thank you, Lord, for returning health. What a boon it is. Took some time to listen to a Free Grace broadcaster from A.W. Pink, preacher from the very early 20th century, who was talking about the blessing of health. It is fascinating how much you appreciate good health when you don't have it, don't you? There are so many lessons illness can teach us. There are so many things that having just an off day physically can remind us, starting with gratitude. Don't know if you've ever caught this little parenthetical in Romans chapter 1 describing the depravity of man, the descent of how we go down, down, down to the bottom of the barrel when it comes to sinning. And it, as it descends, it talks about the individual, the sinner, who just gets more and more depraved and ultimately ending up in sexual depravity of whatever manifestation. Nor were they thankful. Well, isn't that a fascinating little parenthetical remark? That people in their depravity are not thankful. And Paul saw fit to mention it because the Holy Spirit inspired him to do so, pointing out how wicked it is to be ungrateful. Consider Paul's letter to Timothy when he gives him a laundry list of different sins. People in the latter days, they're going to be haters of men. They're not going to be good kids. They're going to be murderers and unthankful. Whoa, what is that doing in there? I think it is a reminder that we are so persistently filled with a lack of ingratitude, the sin of presumption that we are somehow owed good health every day, that we are owed a tap that you can just turn and oop, out comes the water. Do you appreciate your dishwasher? I didn't until last night. We're sitting at the kitchen counter. The dishwasher is running and Mrs. Friel, who can smell stuff, because women can. Men, not so much. We don't smell things so good. Nevertheless, and by the way, that is one of the signs of coronavirus. You lose your taste and you lose your sniffer. I don't know if that's the case because despite the size of this hunker on the front of my face, it don't work so good anyway. And she said, do you smell that? It smells like something's on fire. When your wife says that, it's pretty good to get up and check it out. What was it? The dishwasher. Yeah. No, it wasn't on fire. The water wasn't pouring into it. So the dishwasher goes kafritz. Well, now you start doing what? Well, you start Googling. Why isn't the water entering the dishwasher? And what's it going to cost to fix this bad boy? Because now you realize, uh-oh, something that I've been taking for granted is busted, and now I've got to deal with it. And you don't appreciate it until it's gone. You're a lot like Chicago singing a love song. You just found out a little bit too late that you were taking for granted all of the things that you have, perhaps physical things, health things, people things. Question, have you thanked God lately not only for your dishwasher, not only for your good health, but for the people that he has given to you? Isn't it amazing how many love songs have been written? Oh, I blew it. I shouldn't have let her go. I shouldn't have treated her that way. Shouldn't have taken her for granted. I was acting like she was lucky to have me. And then you don't know what you got until it's gone. You find out just a little bit too late. Those are the lessons that we can learn when God puts us through a health trial. And I would also suggest this. One of the lessons that you can learn, and God does this, if you take a little look over the backstory of your life, how much stuff have you had to learn through adversity, difficulty, or challenge? There are so many attitudes that have been rotten inside of me that God has fixed through putting me through it. And I will tell you this. This is not a bragging point. I'm just telling you about my wicked little heart. Anytime that I would hear about somebody with some of these mysterious maladies, we don't know where they really come from. There's no center for why this should be happening. There doesn't appear to be a cure, but these are people who experience the drags. They're tired, they're fatigued, they're achy all the time. You know, sort of like coronavirus. And I didn't used to think that they were real. I just thought maybe these are people who were just, you know, they didn't have as much fortitude as I have. And then God goes and gives me the Rona. That's right. Even if he didn't give it to me per se, he permitted me to get it, which means I must have needed coronavirus, otherwise I wouldn't have gotten it. And as I was kind of staggering down a hallway one day with that melatonin Benadryl sort of feeling, I realized, wow, have I ever had a sour attitude toward those people who maybe feel like this all the time? So here now is the coronavirus punchline. There are things that you and I need to learn. And there are times that because of our hard-headedness, God has to do something painful or difficult in our lives to make us appreciate what he's already been giving to us. The key for the Christian is to figure that stuff out before God has to put us through the refiner's fire. Question, have you been taking any time to figure out what those things are before God has to painfully bring them to your attention? This is Wretched Radio. No doubt many of your kitchen table conversations have involved health insurance. Mrs. Friel and I used to talk about it a lot, but not since we joined MediShare, Biblical Health Sharing. Over 400,000 Christians sharing each other's medical expenses so far to the tune of $4 billion. You can be confident they can handle your medical bills too. An average family through MediShare will save approximately $500 per month, and you'll be able to sleep at night. And right now, they're waiving their application fee during the month of November, which just might be open enrollment time for you. Please, maybe it's time for you to reconsider how you protect yourself and family. To learn more about MediShare, visit MediShare.com/wretched, MediShare.com/wretched, or call their nice folks, 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE.
Hey, it's another day and another Wretched Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for this edition of Wretched Radio. We certainly appreciate your time. Every month, Wretched sends out a newsletter. If you haven't already signed up for that, it covers tough theological issues and keeps you up to date on all things new at Wretched. You'll receive updates on not only what's happening at Wretched, but you'll also receive thorough and in-depth messages on a wide range of theological issues that Christians face today. Sign up for the Wretched newsletter if you haven't done so already. You do that at wretched.org/newsletter. That's wretched.org/newsletter. And while you're on our website, take a look at becoming a gospel partner. It's gospel partners that make everything we do at Wretched possible. We would love for you to pray about and consider becoming a monthly partner with Wretched. Your faithful and consistent support will help Wretched reach millions of people all around the world. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
And now a message from our dear brother Paul Marty of the Tomorrow Clubs in Eastern Europe.
Support from the Wretched audience has enabled us to continue to bring a message of hope, the gospel of Jesus Christ, to the forsaken places we serve. Thank you so much.
Thank you indeed if you are a Tomorrow Club supporter. If you're not, would you please consider becoming one? Just $30 per month to disciple 30 kids. Learn more at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. Romans was written by the Apostle Paul to the church in Rome. It is a thorough, systematic presentation of the gospel.
The two major themes are sin and righteousness. Sinners are counted righteous by imputation of Christ's righteousness. If you wish to understand the gospel, the clearest, most thorough explanation is in the book of Romans. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Quick! Name the first four presidents of the United States. Congratulations, you did it! This is Wretched Radio quiz question number two. Quick! Name the four kings that were ruling underneath the prophetic ministry of Isaiah the prophet. Oh, that was a little harder, wasn't it? Isn't it interesting? You and I can rattle off Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Adams. Might get a little fuzzy after that, but the point is, you and I had to take some time, perhaps in grade or middle school, to memorize the presidents of the United States. And to this day, we can kind of cobble them together. We can at least put a president in a particular century, or at least identify a president with a particular world event. Question number three. Do you ever struggle to read the Old Testament, especially prophetic literature? Have you ever jumped into the book of Isaiah and gone, oh, wow, this is kind of hard? And I wonder if just maybe the lesson to be learned from the difficulty of reading a prophetic book like Isaiah is actually a bit of a finger point. That we have maybe spent good time being used to memorize the presidents of the United States, but we don't take as much time to memorize the history of the nation of Israel, which causes us, therefore, to read a book like Isaiah and go, what is this thing all about? And then when we finally get unto a verse where we recognize, oh, unto us a son is born, unto us a child is born. Oh, good, I recognize. And then who are these people? What's that place? What's this illusion? What's going on? If you struggle, perhaps, to read the book of Isaiah or any Old Testament prophetic book, maybe, just maybe, it is time for you and me to spend more time studying not American history, that's fine if you want to, but to truly study a history that's more important from a Christian perspective, and that is the history of the nation of Israel. Do you know when did the northern and southern tribes divide? Who was the first king at that division? Who were the tribes in the top part and in the bottom part? What was it called? The northern tribes, what were they called? Oh, you go, that was Israel. Oh, okay, what about Ephraim? What about the different names that God uses for different kings? Do you and I know any of those details? I decided to dig out something that needed some dusting off. And believe it or not, this is going to, I think, reveal our desperate need to spend more time studying Jewish history than even American history. This happens to, I'm not going to tell you. This was in my bookshelf with the different things that I decided to hold on to throughout the years of studying the Bible. And so this happens to be from Daniel Coutts. It's the first booklet inside of this three-ring binder that I have. It's God's Creating Activity. So, of course, it's dealing with the story of creation in Genesis. Book number two, and they're pretty lengthy books, by the way, with pretty small print, about 25 pages each. Man's History from Adam to Abraham. That's number two. Number three, Israel's Founding Fathers. Going through who were the early people who founded Israel, even before the kings. Israel's Redemption and Covenant. That's book number four. Israel's Redemption and Covenant. Book number five is apparently missing from my series. Number six, Israel's Migration from Mount Sinai to Canaan. Obviously, what is inside of this Bible study is the history of the Jewish people throughout the Old Testament. Israel's conquest of Canaan, that's chapter 7. Israel's Psalms, that would be book number 9. Israel's wisdom literature, Israel's divided kingdoms. And then we start getting into an area that would help us a lot with understanding the book of Isaiah. This is book 12 in this Bible study. The Israelites and the Assyrians. Ooh, that sounds cool. Now, this Bible study goes on and on. It's got a few more chapters left to it. So that's about maybe 200 pages, give or take, of the history of Israel in very fine print. Do you know what age this booklet was written for? Do you know what age of child had to study this information about the history of Israel and memorize lists of kings, lists of major historical events? Answer, seventh grade. Seventh grade. This is actually what I just shared with you is what we call, in part, a catechism. A catechism, now, rightly defined, a catechism is a book of questions and answers. What is the chief end of man? To glorify God and enjoy Him forever. Who is God? Who is man, etc.? And then you memorize the answer with a Bible verse. That is to catechize a child. But I think included in catechizing young people is teaching them history. I don't think that you could even buy a set like this anymore for seventh graders. They're just not available. It's got whipped cream and whoop-de-doo all over it, but it does not have historical details. And we are robbing our kids of more important information than American history itself. Let me share with you, case in point, because our Sunday sermon happened to be based on Isaiah chapter 9. You know, that great promise, hey, there's a light that's going to shine, good news. And we read that part and we go, oh, yeah, yeah, that's good. That's about Christmas. But the rest of the book is a bit of a muddle, starting with chapter 1, verse 1. The vision of Isaiah, the son of Amoz, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, the kings of Judah. Ha ha! What? If you don't know the kings of Judah, you don't know the kings of the north, this is already a profound muddle. You don't know what's going on here. So now, hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord has spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they've rebelled against me. So I don't even, who's talking here? Who is this? All right, well, it is a prophecy from Isaiah, who was a prophet during the reign of four kings, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. And he is now going to scold whom? You would probably say Israel. No, not Israel. Sometimes Israel, but a lot of it was aimed at the southern tribes, the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. Judah was the name of the southern tribes, the two southern tribes after the division, after the little problem of Jeroboam and Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, the son of David. Without this historical information, you are swimming in an absolute and utter sea of confusion. Is it any wonder that our kids read the Bible and go, and maybe we do too. We need, perhaps, now more than ever, to be understanding not American history, which has its place, but Jewish history. Why did Isaiah write this book? And by the way, I don't know if you knew this about Isaiah. Isaiah was basically the Charles Spurgeon of the prophets, give or take. I can't remember. I think I read this last night. That Jeremiah, for instance, he used 1,600 different words. Isaiah used 2,600 different words. That means he was a smart dude. And he had access to kings. And he was a prophet. And he preached, I'm telling you, like pastors don't preach these days. He warned them, wash yourselves, make yourselves clean, put away the evil of your doings from before my eyes, cease to do evil, learn to do good, seek justice, rebuke the oppressor, defend the fatherless, plead for the widow. And about five chapters of sinful behavior of a group of people that he says are offering sacrifices to him. That's fascinating, isn't it? That Isaiah is addressing somebody who's doing a pretty good job of doing their temple duties correctly. What do we learn from that? The southern tribes were basically Orthodox. But what does Isaiah say to them? But you're acting like rank pagans here, and I don't want your sacrifices. I want your heart. So what do we get from Isaiah? Well, we've got a situation stirring with four different kings going on. The children in the South, as well as the North, by the way, are acting very badly, even as the children in the South are externally acting pretty religiously. They're offering the sacrifices, and yet Isaiah is rebuking them. And now Isaiah is about to lay it down on them and point out perhaps their chief sin in their laundry list of sins that he writes for them. And that is their desire for societal and civil comfort. Does that sound familiar? Does that maybe sound doubly familiar? You and I, we are Orthodox. We understand justification. We understand correct soteriology. We're doing our duties. And yet Isaiah is about to shake the children of Israel, the southern tribes, to the core by indicting them. You are clinging to civil comforts way too much. And God is about to do a smackdown on you to get you to see the folly of your confused priorities. Question, does that sound potentially familiar? What was God doing with the Jews? What might he be doing with us? Next on Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I am Jimmy Higgs. Well, religious schools, along with the parents of students attending those schools in Kentucky, have filed a lawsuit against Governor Andy Beshear for restricting in-person learning. Last week, Beshear issued an order banning schools from holding classes in person. Other establishments, such as restaurants, gyms, and indoor recreation facilities, however, may allow a maximum capacity of 25 people per room. The new restrictions are being enforced in both private and public schools. The schools contend that Beshear's order violates their freedom of religion under the First Amendment, as well as the state's Religious Freedom and Restoration Act. State Attorney General Daniel Cameron joined the 17 schools' lawsuit against Beshear. Additionally, more than 1,000 parents have also filed a separate brief supporting the lawsuit. Roger Byron, senior counsel at First Liberty, indicated that the governor had overstepped both the law and the CDC, who has, quote, made it clear that one of the safest locations students can be at during the pandemic is in school. He also chided Beshear for allowing other venues freedom while restricting it from the schools. The Democratic governor, however, told Kentucky residents in his latest COVID-19 update that it is not safe for children to return to school. Attorneys for the governor filed a response to the school's lawsuit, stating that the religious schools have been treated equally to public schools and that they cannot counter the substantial harm and detriment to the public interest that their requested relief could cause. The Kentucky Supreme Court also recently agreed with Beshear and gave him the green light to continue the restrictions. Well, thousands upon thousands of Argentinians urged lawmakers to reject a bill to legalize the killing of unborn babies and abortions on Saturday during a peaceful pro-life protest across that country. According to a news report, thousands of protesters wore light blue and they carried signs that read, "Save Both Lives" and "March for the Unborn." Other pro-life protests also took place across Argentina. The Congress of Argentina is scheduled to begin debate this week on a bill to legalize abortions up to 14 weeks. The president of Argentina introduced the pro-abortion bill earlier in the month. It's the ninth attempt by abortion activists to legalize the killing of unborn babies in the South American country. Currently, Argentina protects unborn babies from being killed in abortions. Exceptions are allowed in cases of rape and threats to the mother's life. Most countries in Central and South America protect unborn babies from abortion. But Argentina's current president wants to change that. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Higgs.
Normally at this moment, I would take a second to talk about the thing that we're going to talk about in 25 seconds. Instead, would like to take this time to encourage you to please visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. The work of the Tomorrow Clubs preaching the gospel in poor Eastern European villages, it soldiers on despite the COVID business. $30 a month, you'll be discipling 30 little kids who then bring the gospel home to mom and dad, who then start attending the local church. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is mercy. Those who possess this gift are able to show compassion and comfort the afflicted, people who are sick, dying, or bereaved. God cares about the things that afflict us and has provided comfort in troubled times.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
This is Wretched Radio. The book of Isaiah, it can be understood only when we understand the historical context of that book. And when we take just a few moments to do what we really don't do much of these days, and that is to understand Jewish history, Middle Eastern history, we miss out on the lessons that God has taught the Jewish people for our benefit so that we do not commit the same sins that they did. And it sure does look like we've got ourselves a parallel of the children of the southern tribes of Israel during the time of the prophetic ministry of Isaiah the prophet. American history, very nice. Jewish history, way nicer, way more important. If you have not read 1st and 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles lately, get in there, read all six of those books, and then read Isaiah. And you're going to be shocked at all of a sudden, hey, I think I get what's going on here. Why? Because the Bible is not a slapdash collection of mishmashed, well, that one seems to, put that one in there. Put it over here. Put it over there. Now, you get yourself in 1st and 2nd Samuel, Kings and Chronicles, a history of the nation of Israel. And if you read through, for instance, at the end of 2nd Kings, you read about the prophet Isaiah. Hey, he's got a book named after him. Right. And his ministry is actually described historically in 2 Kings. What was going on? What was happening? What were the kings doing? Who was in power? Who was controlling the land? What was happening here? You learn about it. So then when you read the book of Isaiah, a light bulb is going to go on and you're going to say, oh, I get it. But without understanding anything of Jewish history and taking the time to teach our kids about Jewish history, which in my estimation, way more important than American history, at least if we want to understand the Bible. Let me take you, if and you don't mind, to Isaiah. In the year King Uzziah died. Hey, I think I know that verse. That's chapter 6 of Isaiah. He's going to have a vision. He gets to see the throne of God. Right. Question, who is Uzziah and why was he mentioned? It's important because in chapter 7, after his vision, Isaiah says, see if you can keep up with this. Now it came to pass in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, that Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up to Jerusalem to make war against it. But it could not prevail against it. And it was told to the house of David, saying, Syria's forces are deployed by Ephraim. So his heart and the heart of his people were moved as the trees of the weeds of the woods and moved with the wind. That do anything for you? Probably not. But if you had read through 1 and 2 Samuel, etc., you would know, okay, I remember the political scene that was going on here and what God's lament is toward the children of the southern tribes of Judah. They had been doing well under several kings. There were good kings. Uzziah was probably the last of the good kings for a while. And the nation, the tribes of the south, had been experiencing prosperity, safety, comfort. Sound familiar? Now the political situation is changing. Why? Because Uzziah died. Remember chapter 6? Uzziah died. Uh-oh, now that means we're having a political regime change. Sound familiar? And the people are feeling like trees blown in the wind. Sound familiar? So what was the political situation? Well, basically, Assyria was on the rise. These were nasty, nasty people. By the way, in the aforementioned Bible study that I shared with you in chapter 12, the Israelites and the Assyrians, you learn all about the Assyrians. Seventh grade, you learn that stuff. Why? So that you realize when you hear about Assyria, you go, oh, bad dudes, bad dudes. And so the king of Israel was thinking, the northern tribes was thinking, hey, let's get together with the Philistines and the Edomites, and let's have ourselves a little pact with Aram, another northern country, so that this little four-country consortium can stand against Assyria, who was threatening them. Remember Tiglath-Pileser, those names, Sennacherib? They were threatening. By the way, do you know that there is a lot of external writing from those guys about the nation of Israel? Did you know that? Would you like to hear a little bit about Israel right now, at least according to a pagan? This is from this particular book. Tiglath-Pileser III wrote about Israel's kings, quote, "As for Menahem, I overwhelmed him like a snowstorm, and he fled like a bird alone and bowed at my feet. I returned him to his place and imposed tribute upon him, to wit, gold, silver, linen garments, and multicolored trimmings. Great I received from him, Israel, all of its inhabitants, and their possessions I led to Assyria. There they overthrew their king Pekah, and I placed Hoshea as king over them. I received from them 10 talents of gold, 1,000 talents of silver, as their tribute brought them to Assyria." Did you know that there's all kinds of stuff that we can learn about Israel from external writings to boot? Nevertheless, these four countries, they wanted to get together to make sure that they could fend off the nasty Assyrians. And what did they want the southern tribes to do? To join them. And they kept saying, no, no, no. But now the question is, are we going to join them? Because God said, don't do that. Trust me for your protection. Trust me for your security. Trust me for your civil peace. Trust me. But they rebelled. And that is what we see then in Isaiah chapter 7. The word of the Lord said, go out to meet him and tell the king it's going to be just fine, not to worry. And in fact, to the king, would you like a sign? I'll give you a sign that it's going to be okay. And Ahaz says, nah, I don't really want a sign. I don't want your sign. I don't want to be tempting the Lord or anything. He wasn't a believer. He didn't want God's sign. It was a rebuff of God. Then we read this in chapter 7. The Lord spoke to Ahaz, saying, ask for a sign. I'll give it to you. Nah, I don't want one. Hear now, O house of David. You're wearying me. Therefore, the Lord's going to give you a sign anyway. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son and shall call his name Emmanuel. Oh, that's the context for that Christmas promise? Oh, it was written to those people as a sign to let them know you're freaking out about everything political. All the civil unrest, the confusion, the uncertainty, the warring nations, Assyria, they're going to take over. You're worried about Russia. Aram. Don't worry about these things. And here's proof. I'm going to give you a sign, and he's going to be born to you, and he is going to live among you. And then we find ourselves being told that Assyria is going to invade because you're not trusting, you're not believing my promises, you're going to get whacked, it's going to get really hard for you, and it's going to get really black, and it's going to get really bleak. And then in chapter 9 of Isaiah, this is what we get. Nevertheless, the gloom will not be upon her who is distressed. And when at first he lightly esteemed the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward more heavily oppressed her, the people who walked in darkness will see a great light. Those who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death, upon them a light has shined. What is this all up? What does this have to do with Christmas? And what does this have to do with us? And the answer is a lot. Israel is not America. America is not Israel. If there's going to be a parallel at all here, and have to do this carefully, it's going to be with Israel and the church. That there is a warning here for us, that you and I, we might be really orthodox in our theology, offering correct sacrifices at the temple, and yet we're shaken like trees because we're worried that our civil peace is going to be robbed from us because of bad rulers, bad decisions, and really powerful nations. And God says, here's my promise to you. It's the Messiah. It was the promise to the Jews to calm their troubled hearts, and it is the promise to us today. If you are freaking out about the political situation, you're worried about civil unrest, you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, what is God doing? Perhaps he's putting us through it, just like he used the Assyrians to cause trouble for the Jewish people to do what? To shake them from their belief in chariots and horses as being their source of comfort and peace and safety, to trust in Christ and to look to his Son for our peace, to find our hope in him, to find our satisfaction in him, to enjoy him, to know that our priority has been taken care of by him and that we don't have anything to worry about. That is the lesson, or at least a lesson, from Isaiah chapter 9 and God's wonderful promise at Christmas time that he's going to send a son. Don't miss that perhaps this Christmas. A lot of distractions right now, and perhaps you have been taking your eyes off of the prize of the Christian faith, which is Christ himself, and you're worried about what's going to happen. Where is this country going? What is it going to be like for my kids? The answer, unto you a son was born, unto you a child was given. Find your hope, your peace, your comfort, your everything in him. And even as the world perhaps crumbles at God's command, he is doing it so that your priorities, my priorities, are correct. We do not put our trust and hope in political systems or parties, but we're always trusting and loving and living for the Son who was given to us. This is Wretched Radio.
It's here! It's here! Road Trip to Truth is finally here! We know you've been waiting patiently, but it is finally here! Join host John Ferbarez on his journey to find answers on the topics of evolution, depression, the reliability of the Bible, the existence of God, and of course, truth itself. Not only can you purchase the 13 full-length episode show, you can also purchase the Bible study course, perfect for middle schoolers through adults. Don't believe us? Maybe you'll take Tim Challey's word for it. He says, quote, "For too long, too much of the material prepared for young folk has been insultingly shallow and embarrassingly trite. What makes it even worse is that many young people are crying out for solid content while their youth leaders serve them nonsense. I'm thankful that Road Trip to Truth unashamedly and effectively deals with real, meaty, life-changing truths of the Christian faith." So visit roadtriptotruth.org and get your copies. That's roadtriptotruth.org.
Not that we normally quote Joseph Stalin on Wretched. Nevertheless, he rightly said, "The death of one man is a tragedy. The death of millions is a statistic." We have to be so careful that our Christian hearts don't grow cold when we hear the statistic that 1 million babies die every year from abortions. We need to remember that is one baby at a time. That is one mommy. That is one child. That is even one daddy.
My choice to become a mom and hear those little footsteps running down the hallway every morning is all because I had an ultrasound. It saved my life. And hers.
Ultrasounds save lives, one baby at a time. How many ultrasounds could you provide through preborn.org/wretched for just $28 per ultrasound? Please help save one baby at a time. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
And now for some poetry. Roses are red, violets are splendid. Visit our website for all things wretched. And before you ask, yes, this poem was inspired by true events. Did you know that at wretched.org you can watch full-length 30-minute Wretched TV episodes? Listen to the full-length 60-minute Wretched radio episodes. Visit our store for helpful and biblically sound resources. And last but not least, become a gospel partner. It's only thanks to our gospel partners that Wretched continues to exist. So head on over to wretched.org for all things wretched.
Lexicon. There are many words to help us understand the nature of the Bible. Words like perspicuity, the clarity of Scripture. God uses the text of Scripture to clearly communicate his character and will. God has not hidden his will for only the enlightened few to find. His truth can be clearly understood by anyone who reads his word. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If you don't get Isaiah 9 straight, your head might just explode. This is Wretched Radio. Whilst I had a little bit of time to nap and get over the coronavirus business, saw a little bit of news. Not much, little bit, because it just keeps changing every single second. And to keep up with it, whew, you can use your discretionary time as you see fit. But I got to tell you, keeping up with what they are serving us every single second, it is a wearisome task. Nevertheless, one of the dominant news stories that kept coming through my feeds was an interview with Barack Obama, which kind of made me laugh and gently sob a little bit at the same time. It was absolutely staggering. And he is not the only one that I've seen lately. I've seen interviews with different leaders, different politicians, different state leaders, national leaders. And it is absolutely amazing to me what is happening right now in our culture. Barack Obama was being interviewed. I think it was like the Sunday morning program. Maybe it was 60 Minutes, whatever. And he was saying basically the exact opposite of what you probably think. I mean, it was like, what party are you in? Did you change parties? Because I thought you used to be opposed to those things. Now you're for those things. And you used to be for those things. Now you're talking like you're opposed to those things. So for instance, and I'm just making up a couple of these, but it was this blatantly backwards. You know, I'm very concerned. This is my Barack Obama impression. I'm very concerned that, you know, these Republicans, they want to take away our Second Amendment right to own firearms. I'm very, very concerned about that. What? Wait, you are? What are you? Huh? And furthermore, I'm very concerned about freedom of the press, that our press is just being undermined and that we need to have freedom of the press. And I do believe that this current administration has really done so much to undermine that. Huh? Are you? Really? I thought, and I'm very concerned that the Republicans are for abortion. What are you talking about, man? I mean, it was absolutely the opposite of everything that he stands for, said exactly backwards, aiming at the other side, who, in my estimation, believes the exact opposite of what he was presenting. Now, I saw things like that over and over again. And I'll tell you, you can't operate well in a world like that. It's very difficult, where truth has absolutely no meaning whatsoever, where there is no standard, where there is nothing but a world of lies. This from Table Talk magazine. Standing before Pontius Pilate during the final moments of his life, Jesus declared the reason he came into the world was to bear witness to the truth. That would be your John 18:37. Didn't think the Bible was relevant? Jesus added, "Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Jesus proclaimed he came to bear witness to the truth, not a vague, obscure concept that's just open to everybody's opinion, but to bear witness to God's truth, the objective truth. The whole of his ministry fulfilled this divine charge of truth bearing. It was prophesied that he would be full of grace and truth. He calls himself the truth. His whole teaching and preaching ministry was characterized of the way of God in truth, Matthew 22:16. He entered the world proclaiming the truth, pointing to the truth, bearing witness to the truth, confirming the truth, and all who listened to his voice. He is the truth. The Apostle Paul warned the church at Corinth, "I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from sincere and pure devotion to Christ." Why? Because the devil is a liar, and he deceives, and he obscures the truth. And it can have some truth in it, but as long as it also has a little bit of lie in it, it totally corrupts what is purely true. And he's perpetually lying, and Jesus is the truth. And now we are living in a world where the lines are currently so blurred, so deceptive these days. How do we live in a world like this? Well, you could be inclined to lose hope, couldn't you? I've actually been hearing some Christians talking like that. What's the point in voting? It seems like the whole system is corrupt anyway. Okay, that's a discouraged point of view. I get it. I understand that. I also see some Christians that are like, these people, they're just so bonkers. There's just no point in engaging. Feel like that? What are we dealing with here? We are dealing indeed with a battle for truth, and I'm not talking about a political battle. I do not think that you are going to persuade one single liberal person to become conservative in their political values by reasoning and logicking them. Oh, I know there might be a YouTube video here or there where that has happened, but I don't think that you and I are going to somehow persuade a Barack Obama or just somebody who's a sycophant to start thinking better and to start speaking truth and thinking truthfully. They are under the delusion of the devil. And if you and I think that we are somehow going to talk them out of their bad, deceptive thinking by being clever, okay, carry on. But I would like to suggest to you that we need to be proclaiming the word of truth, because their believing needs to be fixed before their thinking and their speaking is going to change. It has to. If they aren't believing in the truth, they're simply going to be further and further away from any plumb line of reality. They need correct believing. And I think that in this troubled time, this confusing time, this tumultuous time, just like the Jewish people at the time of the prophet Isaiah, hey, there's all kinds of political unrest. We don't know what tomorrow's going to hold. There's deception going on. There's deals being cut. There's alliances being made. What's happening? What else did Isaiah say, by the way? Woe to those who say, up is down and down is up. Same sort of things were swirling around in Isaiah's time as they are in our time today. And if you and I take our eyes off of the prize of the one, the comfort, the sign that God gave through Isaiah to that troubled people, we're not going to have a good Christmas, and we're probably not going to have a good rest of our lives. It looks like our world is changing. I don't know how radical it will be. It appears that it could be very radical. And what you and I perhaps grew up just taking for granted is in jeopardy now. How will we live out our days, whether it is a year or whether it is 50 more years, 70 more years? How will you find peace in this? It is only when you submit to the King, Emmanuel, God with us, the Son who was born to us, the Son who was given to us. That's what that prophecy was about. Consider the context of Isaiah chapter 9 and Isaiah chapter 7. These beautiful Christmas verses, it's not just talking about a Messiah's coming. In the context, it is a troubled nation, confused about political unrest, having any sort of semblance of civil life. It is all in jeopardy right now. And God's promise is, I'm going to give you a son, and he's going to reign, and his rule is going to be exactly right. Don't worry. By the time he comes, by the time that he's knows that before he even grows up into adulthood, these kings that you're worried about invading your nation, they're going to be dead. They're nothing. They're little burnt out sticks. You're panicking about them? I'm telling you, I'm giving you a son. God with you. Look to him. Find your comfort in him. Find your peace in him. Trust him. Lean on him. Find your satisfaction in him. Even as the world crumbles, even as God sent Assyria, even with that promise, he also sent Assyria to shellack both tribes, northern and southern tribes. He sent a nasty nation to do what? To wean them off of their correct external orthodoxy, but to have their hearts actually draw near them. And please note this. If you and I are getting swept up in this, we're not getting swept up in this. On the one hand, yeah, we could be feeling the sting of losing a culture that used to be so beneficial for Christian flourishing. But we're not swept up in it because God is not unaware of us. We must need this. We must need this. This must be something that you and I need. That you and I, perhaps, have been clinging too tightly to the wrong kingdom. I'm not talking about becoming detached, not being involved in not voting, not talking about that. I'm talking about our hearts and where our hope and where our trust is. And that if you and I are going to feel what appears to be a coming pinch, that we could be losing our civil society, this democracy that has been such a blessing to so many people, including you and me, we must need to learn something from it. So perhaps this Christmas, as you hear about the prophecies that Isaiah gave to the nation of Israel first, and by extension to you and me, as we look back, consider their context. They were worried, worried, worried about their society, about their politics, about their kingdom, about their nation. And God said, I'm going to send something very difficult for you, so that you will turn your eyes toward the Son that I am promising you. And as we look back, the same lesson applies to you and me if we will learn it this Christmas. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.